You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
What's up, everybody? This is Raised in the Woods. My name's Joel Clayfish. I get to jockey this derby.
Oh, kind of a horse, kind of a little past there. The derby, though.
Well, I don't know about the horse stuff. I'm just saying, I'm trying to find a different thing than captain this ship or ride this roller coaster, whatever it takes.
I just thought of something, but Noah would probably bleep me out. So
yeah, well,
mind.
That's kind of
how to do
you
something
roll.
With your cowboy boots and kicking and stuff around.
Yeah, yes. So I get to host Raised in the Woods, a show about the outdoors of the Great Midwest, Wisconsin, Michigan, Minnesota, Illinois, and Iowa. Some of the most underrated, undervalued outdoor experiences in the entire country happen here. Ellie Lawton is the co-host of the show. She
Hello, Joel.
An award-winning, acclaimed French certified French culinarian, which is fantastic because an important part of the outdoors, hunting, fishing, is bringing that forage to the table, bringing that game to the table. We help you do that in an interesting and easy way so that you're not afraid to step outside the box and do that. We've got a phenomenal panel today. Our star panelist of the show is Patrick Durkin, a lifelong outdoorsman. 50 years he's been in the outdoor industry, writing about it, experiencing it, talking on TV shows. We're going to get into one of his most fascinating and topical things that Patrick Durkin is a part of, Meat Eater.
Yes, I'm excited to talk about this.
The largest outdoor show, which is literally about eating what you kill. One of the things we talk about on the show. We've got Sarah Marinas here. She's our homesteader. Of course, Dan Tim is our local archery expert and adventure man. And Megan the Sommelier Pirate is here as well without her lover, Dave, this week. So shout out to Dave. Sorry you weren't here. We're having a blast without you, though. So so we'll see you next time. I want to go into Wilds of the Week because I did something this last week that I absolutely love, and I look forward to it every year. I don't know if those of you out there know, have watched the show or listened to the show or seen the show know, food is my favorite dish. And I had an outdoor television show that aired on Channel 12, the ABC station in Milwaukee, for 13 years called Kill It, Clean It, Cook It. I was out there probably before Steven Rinella made a life out of his nationally.
There's a great musical piece that goes along with your show, too, if anyone's cruising around on YouTube.
If anyone's cruising around on the internet and they want to look up the Kill It, Clean It, Cook It video.
It was so great.
Hey, I wrote that song and sang it.
I know. That's great.
I did actually sing
that
song.
Megan and I try to show it to everybody we know.
I mean, if you message me personally, I'll send you the link, but I'm not going to post it online.
All right. Well, if you reach out to us through Facebook, we'll send you the link to the music video. It was fun and funny, but
the shows actually were pretty cool. The few that I've watched, they were pretty cool.
Yeah, it was a pretty great experience. And what
you still
was,
have them on VHS, right?
Wow.
Well,
I think they're on beta cam. I think they're on film.
It was in color.
This is true.
Wow.
And in sound?
Yes. Yes.
There's sound, yes.
Yes, and the teleprompter was chiseled into rocks, yes. that was a very fun thing, but I'll be honest, as the creator of that show and the host of the show, writer of the show, and I had a fantastic friend, Peter Kafkas, who he and I did that show together, and Jason Hunter from Channel 12, the chief videographer at Channel 12. We put that show together, and when I reminisce about it, I think to myself, what a cool thing it was to kind of be ahead of the curve of culinary being such a big part of the outdoors and hunting and fishing, and how it has really taken off into one of the greatest television shows, in my opinion, ever created, Meat Eater. Patrick Durkin is here from that, and we're going to hear from him about Meat Eater, what he does for them, how he got hooked up with Steven Ranella and Meat Eater, how he got to be such a large part of the outdoor industry. But first, let's do those wilds.
Well, you're really leaving us hanging. What is your wild of the week?
My wild of the week.
I think we're all sitting on the edge of our seats wondering if he's going to say it or not.
I'm going to say it. I try to eat low carb, and then I fail at that mission a lot because I love food too much, but I made low carb pizza pudgy pies. I busted out the pudgy pie irons and made pudgy pies.
How nostalgic.
I love pudgy pies.
Gosh.
For those of you who don't know what a pudgy pie is, it's two small hand-sized cast irons that hook together with iron rods, and you basically put two pieces of bread in it, fill it with it whatever you like, sweet or savory, cap them together and throw it in a fire, and it makes this handheld, crusty, pocketed pocket.
They're delicious.
It's a crispy, hot, uncrustable.
Basically,
that's what it is.
Yeah.
And they're it's so fantastic. Delicious. I love it. So that's what
I did.
Awesome. Megan, what did you do?
I went to Fargo.
Fargo, as in North Dakota?
Dakota.
Did you visit the fame acclaimed wood chipper from the Fargo movie?
I did not, but I did know about it.
Yeah. And what's funny to me is the accents in that movie are very Wisconsin accents, they sound like to me.
Yeah, I didn't really notice any accents when I was out there.
Okay. Did you do anything fun in Fargo?
No, I visited the airport twice.
Well, that's
there and back. Hey, they have camouflage carpet, though.
Okay.
Oh.
But that's about as
that was kinda neat. It was
like
very hot,
Fargo.
Though.
Dan Tim, resident archery specialist. Did you have anything fun in the outdoors this week?
Yeah. I mean, you guys talked about it on last week's show a little bit, but in the wake of the World Cup, I'm just getting out and kicking the soccer ball around with my son.
Oh, I love
really?
That.
Yeah. Going back to your roots.
That's
did you
right.
play soccer?
I did play soccer, yeah.
What did you play? What position?
I was marking back on defense, so like the right guy in the backfield.
Sure.
On the right-hand
side
of
right
the field.
You were right fullback.
Yeah, right fullback, yep. Yeah.
I played keeper.
Oh, I wanted to play keeper, but you know, at 14 years old, we had a guy that was like 6'4", so
yeah,
he was automatically the keeper.
He was held back a few years.
Yeah, no, he was a great guy. Shout out Brandon.
Well, you were the best under 6'4" keeper that they had. So
I was the backup keeper. There was even a time I went in and made some miraculous saves, made my mom nervous. I was going to be in the position with all the stress, you know, of the goalkeeper, but. Yeah, an affinity for keepers coming from the defensive position, so
yes.
I loved
cool.
it.
Well, I, as a former keeper of the junior varsity Catholic Memorial team, appreciate that.
Shout out Crusaders, right?
And Tony Viteri, our starting keeper, was about 6'4", and I came in at 5'10". So needless to say, I didn't play much and didn't play after that.
Not a bad position to be, though.
However, not much food gets past me.
I'm just a keeper of food.
I'll just say that. Lacey Tim, you brought along your lover today, she's quite an interesting character, too. I wonder why you've been hiding her from us, Dan.
No kidding. Gosh.
Lacey, did you get out this last week?
He finally
week?
Let me out.
Wow. I can see why, because you come along and then people like you more than him. So I get it.
So my wild of the week was we had a date night on Friday at an outdoor wedding.
Ooh.
One of my previous interns got married in Baraboo.
Oh,
nice.
How romantic.
Beautiful area.
Yeah, that was nice. So, yeah,
very good.
Bit.
Patrick Durkin, our star of the week. Did you do anything crazy in the outdoors this week, or fun, or enjoyable, or relaxing?
Enjoyable. Each summer, we try to spend at least 1 week with our grandkids who like to hunt or fish. And so far, well, I have 9 grandkids now.
Do all of them like to hunt and fish?
No.
Okay.
Nope. No, so far... The 3 boys who are older all love it. My other grandson's only 1, so he's not going yet. But what I found fascinating is I took 2 of them, the 2 8-year-olds, out on Lake Michigan off of Manitowoc. And I hadn't been out on Lake Michigan in quite a few years, so it's kind of like the shakedown cruise where you try to get back in.
Get
the,
your bearings back.
Yeah, because, you know, as you know, when you
But you did serve in the Navy,
yeah.
So hopefully that helped.
But that, they never taught me how to run multiple lines at the same time. But what I found fascinating, it was a tough morning. they're catching salmon like crazy this summer on Lake Michigan.
Yes.
But that morning it was dead calm, hot, nothing was happening. We got out there even before dawn. We still didn't do any good. But what was most satisfying was when the morning came and went, you only had one strike and one little flash of excitement. The two boys couldn't wait to get back out in the afternoon.
Oh, that's great.
And that's when I started to realize that I think these guys really like to fish. They aren't just along for the ride. They don't just go along when you're catching fish. And so that meant a lot to me, that I thought, because I think hunting and fishing, if it doesn't have some of that element of failure interspersed with the big moments, it's not really hunting and fishing then. You know, so much you can't
control.
That's a
fact. That's going to the grocery store and shopping then.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But you can't have sunshine without the rain,
right.
Patrick.
Right. And so like when 2 8-year-olds start discovering that and you see evidence of it, that's really satisfying.
You know, have people told you, I know that you've made your career writing. Have people told you that they can tell that in the way you speak? You are a phenomenal storyteller. And that's what writing is.
Yeah, I'm still not public speaking for me was something I really had to work at though.
Okay,
I could tell stories to get up in front of a group of people and talk. It was a long time working at it, and then so when I see a good speaker and hear a good speaker, the people who can get up there and off the cuff and tell a good story, I finally started to realize I can do that off the cuff if I have a story. That's something to talk about.
God knows you have stories.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the people, though, the other thing I'll say about public speaking, though, is if you get asked to give a talk in public, you better have something to say.
Right.
And
yeah.
Not just get up there and try to wing it.
Do a little preparation.
Yeah. Preparation's big.
Yes.
I really believe in that. So
I couldn't agree with you more. Sarah Marinas.
I went to the Bristol Renaissance Fair with my oldest son.
I love that. Did you see the jousting?
Yes.
Okay. Sorry, we're
this
coming at you hot.
This is not my jam, but
Did you dress up?
Yes. Handmade custom costumes that, shout out Sue, my mother-in-law helped curate. So we bought the fabric and we had matching fabrics. So you could tell we came from the same royal family.
Oh,
I called
Wyatt
my lord. He called me my lady.
Wow.
We found his people. And I was feeling wild after seeing the fire whip guy and the jousting and all of the weapons. We went to this one place and I did buy him a sword from Baltimore Sword and Knives.
Wow.
And whew, that was not cheap. But I invest in quality. That sword is going to outlast Wyatt. He can give it to his grandson.
Now, should someone challenge your royal family, he will be set
He's
to defend
been
them
practicing
with
on watermelons.
A real sword.
What was your favorite part?
Just being with Wyatt.
Oh,
that's we do one-on-one dates with all of our boys, and just that is his world. He had his little elf ears on and he
knew the whole thing.
I think
that
I embarrassed
him.
His sword has elfish engraved on it. And I was like, oh, what country is that? Everyone looked at me like I was an idiot. It's from Lord of the Rings, which I have not watched.
All right.
I was like, oh,
did you eat
cool.
The sauteed mushrooms? Do they still have those there? They're
no,
so good.
We went to Cracker Barrel because there's one right by it. And we saw they ate it at the first time when we were in Tennessee, and Wyatt was pretty impressed that there was a Cracker Barrel. So
wonderful.
He said he would like to eat there after.
Can you really go wrong with Cracker Barrel? I mean
no,
you really
he got
can't.
The steak.
And I'm glad they changed their logo back. We have got a phenomenal show set up. Patrick Durkin is here, a 50-year veteran of the outdoors, works on the show Meat Eater. We're going to talk a lot about that. And we've got your recipes of the week. Patrick's going to talk about his as well. This is Raised in the Woods.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Raised in the Woods is your one-stop shop for everything in the great outdoors of the Midwest. We get to broadcast into the wonderful states of Michigan, Minnesota, Wisconsin, Illinois, and Iowa. Thank you for coming along on this journey. My name's Joel Clayfish, running the show, or at least they let me think I do once in a while, but not really. Co-captain Ellie Lawton is here by my side. She is the culinarian with the mostest, who helps us bring that field and forage to the table in a way that you can learn it and do it at home, which is phenomenal asset. I thought I knew how to cook until we started making some of the amazing recipes with wild game since Megan Salazar and Ellie Lawton became part of the show, and that's just fantastic.
We eat good.
Yeah, we sure do. Hey, if you missed the show live, Saturdays at 11 o'clock on your Civic Media stations, where can you catch it?
Well, first of all, you should check out the Facebook page to see what kind of crazy stuff we're up to. I don't ever get to check it because I'm not on Facebook, but I hear it's pretty cool. And then if you miss us on Saturdays, you can check us out on Spotify, Apple, or civicmedia.us. Just search for Raised in the Woods.
Yeah, so it's easy. Come along for the ride. If you're new to the outdoors or hunting or fishing or foraging, please understand we are a safe space for everybody interested in the outdoors. This show talks about everything from camping to kayaking to hunting, fishing, and it is a wide tent. We've talked in the past about how political philosophies from the right and the left are starting to come together in the world of organic harvesting and eating of wild animals. And those harvests are so well in check that they're necessary to create conservation for the states that we broadcast to, and somebody who has experienced conservation across this United States for 5+ decades is Patrick Durkin, an outdoor writer, television, radio guy. And Patrick, you made the drive to come to the studio tonight to record with us. And I want to say thank you for that. I'm honored to have you here. Your stories are incredible. I want to talk specifically now for a little while about the show Meat Eater and your role there, because that's the largest, that is the show that broke the mold from the outdoor industry. And, you know, you could argue the Robertson family and Duck Dynasty and Duck Commander paved that way. But Meat Eater makes no mistake about what it is. It is about eating wild game that you hunt or fish. How on earth did you get hooked up with that?
Well, I should say it. I'm a writer, and so I've never been on the actual TV show. I've been on the podcast multiple times, but my main contribution to Meat Eater is for their website, you know, writing. And I started writing for them back around when they first launched. They kind of relaunched Meat Eater. I don't know if you know the whole history, but Steve started the show back around 2013, 2014, and then it rolled along on the Outdoor Channel and other places, Netflix. And then in 2018, they kind of did a rebrand, got a big investor, and it really took off. It got big. And at that time, this is like around June 2018, Steve invited me to start writing for them. And so like I wrote basically every 2-3 weeks, I read a full-length feature about some topic that we agreed for me to write about. And I'm still writing, but now I'm 70, so I'm kind of been backing off a little bit now. But I think I've written over 150 articles now for Meat Eater over the past 9 years. So I still like writing. I've always thought that I have a hard time calling it a job or work, because I think one thing I will always say about having the Navy background was in the Navy you work your ass off, and I really realized that what I do isn't, compared to real work, I don't try to feel sorry for myself about how many hours I work on my job, because I think it's a lot of time behind the computer. The story I'll tell that illustrates how you got to make it as an outdoor writer, you have to spend time, as much time, more time behind the computer than you do in the woods. Mm-hmm. It's the only way you're going to make enough money at it to pay for things out in the woods. But in my youngest daughter, who's all of Lacey's age, you know, she came home from high school back in the early 2000s, had a classmate, some boy, that wanted to job shadow me for a day. And my daughter told him, why would you want to do that? He sits in the basement all day and stares at his computer. And I do. That's, you know, being a reporter, being a columnist, it's on the phone. It's covering meetings. It sounds like it's all fun and games, but I think the hunting and fishing is a big part of it, an important part of it. But when it comes right down to it, you don't make money at it unless you work, and you work every day of the week. You get up early, stay at the desk late, work through the weekends many times. So it's not as romantic as you might think. But I don't apologize for it. I think I'm one of those guys that when they say on your deathbed you won't regret, you won't have these regrets about not having worked too much. I think, I don't know, I might have a few regrets about things I didn't cover, stories that I didn't get out there and work on, that other things took their place. Because I think what I do for a living, I've been lucky. It's fun to have a talent that you can do something with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it sure is. I get almost sentimental when you talk about it. You know, we have somewhat parallel paths. I spent a great deal of time as a reporter. Yeah. And what's interesting to me that I want to talk about more, I want to talk about the experiences more, is that so many people want to be famous in the outdoors, yeah, right? And I don't think that there is so much of a realization as to how much work it is compared to the fame aspect of it, mm-hmm, and the money aspect that accompanies that. But I'm excited to delve a little deeper into that with you and to talk about some of the great stories you've covered and some of the outdoors that is imprinted on your soul, which is the real reason people who care about the outdoors do it. It is not for the likes. It is not for the listens or views on the TikTok. It's for the real true love and passion of the outdoors, which is what Raised in the Woods is about. We love having you along, and we got more with Patrick Durkin. This is Raised in the Woods. Hey, if you listen to Raised in the Woods, we're happy to have you along. You can follow us on Facebook, Raised in the Woods. You can listen to our show if you don't catch it live at 11 on Saturdays on your civic media station throughout the great states of Wisconsin, Minnesota, Michigan, Illinois, and Iowa. You can check out the podcast. Let me tell you, it's worth it. You're going to have a laugh at my expense, and that's just fine. We are having a fantastic time talking to Patrick Durkin, one of the most prolific outdoor writers of the Midwest and the United States, works for Meat Eater, the show, was talking about Patrick. I'm just going to delve right back into it because this show goes so fast and I want to hear more from you. You made the drive all the way to the studio today, a several hour drive. We really appreciate that. I'd sit here till 4 a.m. recording shows with you if I could. I know that's not possible. So talk to me. We're just starting to talk about how so many people now with social media want to be an influencer, want to be a huntress or a hunter who gets clicks and likes and is beloved by everybody. It is not easy to make money and make a career in the outdoor industry.
No, it never has been. When I started off, I wrote my first outdoor piece in 1982. When I was about 25 years old, I was back in college, and I knew in that era, my big dream job was to get to the Milwaukee Journal, becoming the outdoor, sure, writer or editor, sure, at the Milwaukee Journal. And then 8-9 years later, I ended up having a job offer from Deer and Deer Hunting magazine. So I went there and was editor of the magazine for like almost 11 years. And then I started freelancing in 2001, and I've been doing that ever since. The thing that when all this internet stuff really started to boom, as far as social media and Facebook, and it wasn't until 2018 my youngest daughter built me an outdoor website and got me a professional Facebook page and all these kind of things and Instagram, and I still cringe when I see myself identified by someone as a content creator.
Yes, I can get that.
I just,
hey, Patrick, we cringe when some people say they are too.
Yes, yes. True that.
There are so many people now. Everybody has got a voice now. And I'm not saying that's a good thing. Everybody's mm-hmm. got a voice is a great thing. What is frustrating sometimes is that people think that their voice is bigger than it actually is. And the reality of it is, in order to have credibility and to maintain integrity, you have to be somebody who spends their time in the outdoors and at a computer writing or in a notepad, literally writing. Through the years that you've done this, what are some of the stories that you look back on and think to yourself, man, that was really cool that I got to do. That was a really neat piece to write.
Some of the best ones, they you don't even realize in the moment that they are a really cool story. But you also, I think, if you're a curious person, which is, I think, the number one quality you have to have as a writer, as an editor, someone who's out there gathering information, you have to have the curiosity to ask questions and not be afraid to pick up the phone and call people and sometimes ask questions that annoy people. But to do your job, you have to get down into that stuff that people really are curious about. And so I think sometimes being a journalist, people expect you to ask tough questions a lot of times. And so I think if you don't ask the obvious question, the one that somebody's reading the article and they're thinking, yeah, what about this? What about that? If you don't answer those obvious questions, you know, I think it starts leaving people behind. But I think... One that really still amazes me, I think is the biggest thing I've ever done for Meat Eater was this weird story a few years ago of a fawn that was like about 30 feet up a tree, dead, hanging in a crotch of a tree. And
What?
Yeah. And
I feel like I heard about this.
Yeah. And I called various people to get their thoughts, like avian or raptor experts and stuff like that, and feline, like bobcat experts. Mm-hmm. What could have put this fawn up this tree near, I think it was up by Neillsville, Wisconsin, up in that region. Because there's wolves up there. There's all sorts of animals up in that central forest. But turned out the best theories was that it was a small enough fawn that maybe an eagle had picked it off. And then... at some point in flight, realized I can't cure this damn thing another any farther, and just dropped it. Another one was another theory was that a bobcat totally got out of character and for some reason dragged this fawn up the tree and then left it up in the crotch of the tree and got spooked and ran off and never came back for it. And so you had, what was kind of interesting about it, you had these various experts I interviewed. Actually got a little bit, I don't know if I can, she said the word pissy. But
you can say that.
They got pissy about it. You know, the one guy thought that the idea of a bobcat dragging a deer up the tree was just totally unrealistic. They just don't do that kind of thing. They don't cache their kills the way like a mountain lion does. So you have these real experts getting a little bit torqued with each other, not directly, but through me. Just kind of saying, oh, come on.
You found yourself as the moderator.
Yeah, I found myself in the middle of this. But you know, that ended up being, I think, maybe the most read, downloaded article I ever wrote for them.
Wow.
You know, and it was just just went crazy on the internet. Another one that just fell in my lap was a very similar story where a woman was sitting on her porch in summer up in northeastern Wisconsin, her summer home, watching the lake. And notice this fawn paddling along in the shoreline. And down comes this bald eagle. And this woman's so captivated, I should have stopped and said, she was so captivated by watching that fawn swimming across the side of that lake, she thought, well, is that ever neat? And she got her iPhone out and started videotaping it. Well, right in the middle of it, here comes this bald eagle, down into the scene, drowns the fawn. It's just it was almost painful to watch because fawns are so cute. You can't help but feel sorry for it because it balls a couple of times and that's dead. You know, the bald eagle just held it in their water. And then if you're seeing a bald eagle swim,
Oh, it's hilarious.
It's this big, exaggerated thing that drags it up on the shore, and that's the end of that fawn. But this woman has had this just very lucky moment where she videotaped that. Well, that thing, I wrote that for my weekly newspaper column, which I've been writing after doing my flex here. I've been writing that column since 1984. Wow. without missing a week.
Wow.
And so that column went in the Green Bay Press Gazette. And it was amazing how many people called me then from all over the country, different content creators, or hell you want to call them, and wanting to get the right to that video. And I said, I kept referring to this lady. And then she called me back and asked, well, what kind of money should she be asking for to lease this video out? And I have no background on that. I just told her, I don't know. Don't know, but people wanted to buy that video. And if you Google my name and Bald Eagle Fawn, you'll probably find that story. But I never wrote that one up for Meat Eater because that was kind of before I was really writing for them. But I've been writing that column, and that fun thing about a newspaper column in that era, for the first 35 years of my career, was that's how people got their news.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And it's only in recent years where the newspapers really, really tumbled. Mm-hmm. And you lose the circulation, you lose, the different outlets I used to have, that I used to have all those things and don't now.
So, Patrick, our listeners they're listening and they want to read some of your stuff, do you have all these things linked? You said you have a professional website.
Right.
So your column and your Meat Eater things, are those all linked there?
Yeah, the PatrickDurkinOutdoors.com has all my newspaper stuff.
Wonderful. Okay.
And then if you ever go to the Meat Eater site and just Google my name, or just go on Google and type Meat Eater Patrick Durkin, it'll pop up a big queue of the stuff I've written for Meat Eater.
So, maybe we can put some links on the Facebook page.
I think I can handle that.
Yeah. I'm going to ask a question that's off topic to what we've been talking about in your career, and that is, how do you best like to spend your time in the outdoors? What's your favorite thing to hunt or forage or fish? Or what if Patrick Durkin has his dream day and someone else is going to write about that? What are you doing?
Probably whitetail hunting of some sort. I've never been a deer hunter who is really locked into the big buck thing. I've been lucky enough to kill some really big bucks in my life. But the thing, I just like hunting, and I love deer hunting. I love bow hunting. I love muzzle loading. I love rifles. I have lots of deer rifles, especially. I'm not into most other stuff. But the other thing that I picked up late in life, not that late, I was 50 years old. But I never hunted elk till I was 50. And then I've been hunting elk now for the last 22 years. And it's awesome. Just fascinating. It's just anything that calls back to you, it just makes it a little more exciting.
Yes, very exciting.
Then the added challenge of you have to be physically fit enough to get up in the mountains and go after them and then pack them back out if you get one. So that was something that until I was in my 50s, I just didn't do. I was so locked into the whitetail world when I was at the magazine, and then before that at the newspaper, that those opportunities just didn't have time for me. I was too much into the deer world.
I've heard it likened to turkey hunting.
Yeah.
Is there that similarity?
Well, yes. I think most guys, that's for most, there are some real similarities there. And the guys who are really good elk hunters and really good turkey hunters, you can see why they'd be good at both.
Because I really love turkey hunting.
And turkey hunting for me in recent years has gotten to be a lot more fun for me for whatever reason. It just in the more recent years, I've just gotten a lot more into it.
I love everything about turkey hunting. That's fascinating. You live a fascinating life.
Thank you.
There's no doubt about it. And I think that for those of us here in this studio and for the listeners who get to have an appreciation for the outdoors, I think one of your legacies in the writing world is that you explain things and you're such a good storyteller that you're getting people who aren't necessarily interested or who haven't necessarily gotten into it, and you're getting them into it. And we're at the precipice now of losing hunters And I think this way of taking organic food to the table is a new way to interest new people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. If there's one thing I really have loved about my career, and I miss though, is that when I had my newspaper column syndicated to Green Bay, Madison, Wausau, a lot of the bigger state newspapers, the biggest group of letters I would typically get each week was from older women. They were.
It was because of the boat.
It's about a lot of them were widows.
Oh,
and they liked reading my stuff because it kind of reminded them of their husband.
Oh, that's
you get these really
awesome.
Nice sentimental letters sometimes from women, older women, and then when the newspapers fell away, and those letters stopped coming, I had
that
never gotten
tough.
Over it.
That was tough, I bet.
Yeah.
But I think the lesson there is when you do something with a passion, and all of us here are passionate about the outdoors, you really do make an impact. You may not see the people you impact when you do it, but the love for the conservation and the continuation of the species and the proliferation of the species and being able to continue the lifestyle that we get to lead bringing food from the field to the table really does make a difference. And I've said it before and I'll say it again, one person can make a difference. This is Raised in the Woods.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Raised in the Woods would not be the world-renowned show that we are if it were not.
Wow.
The food we talk about on this show. I love the last segment of the show because it is about field and forage to table. And we've got Patrick Durkin, the icon in the outdoor industry, works for Meat Eater, has made a career of writing about the outdoors, experiencing the outdoors. And I'm told Chef Lawton, who usually captains the ship of the food segment.
The food ship?
The food ship lollipop.
Of course, I drive the food ship.
Yeah, well, you've got a recipe to talk about, and we have a recipe from Patrick Durkin to talk about.
Well, we do have a recipe from Patrick. My wild of the week was skipped, but that was a good thing, and Joel did it on purpose.
Well, see, now I thought you were going to say it in a way that didn't blame me, but I should have known better.
She said you did it on purpose.
Yes. Oh, all right.
It was well thought out.
Well, now because, the jig is up.
Because it has something to do with...
Throw yourself under the bus.
Yeah.
Not
the
first
way to run yourself over there. So, my wild of the week, going to go back. I recently spent some time out in the beautiful state of Iowa, so shout out to our Iowa listeners. But on my way... I had to go to the oldest hamburger stand in Wisconsin.
Oh, I've always wanted to go there.
Okay.
So I went to Pete's Hamburgers. They opened in 1909. So everything is still the way it was. It is still a boiled/steamed burger. And you can get it with ketchup, mustard, or fried onions. There's no cheese. There's no funny business there. That is what you walk up to the window and you tell them what you want, the two little things you can get, and that's what you're getting. So I had the opportunity to go there and try that.
And?
It was really good. It
okay.
It was
so a boiled hamburger. I don't know if that sounds
like,
good.
That sounds like a
so it's
weird
on a
meatball.
So it's on a griddle, and there's a lot of like juice and steam on the griddle, right? So then they cover it a little bit. It kind of boils, and then they have the onions sautéing. It was really good. So I will say, I am like a crispy kind of smash burger girl. If I have my choice, that's the route I go. But this was very good. It took me back, actually. So I grew up on a farm. I went to a lot of like auctions with my dad as a child. And at these auctions, they would always have like a hamburger trailer. And they would make these like steamed hamburgers in them. And it took me right back there. So if you're ever in Prairie du Chien, go to Pete's Hamburgers. It was so great. And then my second, I've been eating a lot this summer. I don't know.
Well,
it's whatever.
Okay. Have to eat to live.
So we went out to celebrate, actually, Pirate Megan. And we went to Three Brothers Serbian restaurant in Milwaukee in Bayview area. It was my first time there. I've been wanting to go for a long time, and we finally got the opportunity, and it was so worth it. It's so fantastic. The food was great. We got the burek, which is the traditional, we got the beef burek. So that's phyllo dough, several layers, just layers and layers and layers. It takes an hour to make. So you got to like, you can call and pre-order it. Or if you go there, you can sit the hour and wait. They have so many great things. Megan, what was your favorite thing we had?
Oh, the Wiener Schnitzel.
Oh, yeah, it was great.
Well, you can't go wrong with Burek or Wiener Schnitzel. But if we don't go somewhere, we're not going to get to Patrick's recipe.
We're going
to
get there. We're going to get there. Just slow this food train down. We're going to get there. But there's so many great places to eat. And yes, I didn't have a recipe today, but man, I've been doing some great eating. And if you ever need some tips or a new place to go and dine, reach out to us on the Facebook page and we will point you in the right direction. And I'm going to point this direction to Patrick to give us his recipe.
My recipe isn't an original from me, but if you are ever in Cross Plains, Wisconsin, just west of Madison, and you go into the Piggly Wiggly there and go into their meat department where all the sausage is. Mm-hmm. Up on the wall there is a picture of a old butcher, the big, big butcher knife. That's my maternal grandfather.
Oh, cool.
His name is Joseph Frank. And most of the recipes for sausage in that store are still his old recipes that came down through the years.
Wow, is that neat.
It's really a proud part of my heritage, you know. And for a number of years, after I killed my first elk, I remember leaving behind the liver, and I kept looking at that thing. It's in an elk
it's huge.
Liver is monstrous.
Yeah.
And I just had guilt that why am I not somehow using? I took the heart, but I left the liver behind. And I started thinking I should learn how to make liver sausage and put the stuff to use.
You
can mix hearts, you can mix all those organs in together with it. And so this Tim Sauer, the sausage maker at the Piggly Wiggly now in Cross Plains, they used to make it, all that liver sausage from my grandfather. They quit making it about a year or two ago. So he said, well, I'll tell you how to make it. It's not hard.
Oh, good. So we can get the recipe.
Yeah, so it's really simple. You basically take, you know, let's say you have 10 pounds of elk livers or deer livers and hearts, whatever you are putting in, and you basically add 50% to that. So like if you have 10 pounds of liver, you have 15 pounds of pork shoulder.
Okay.
And that's your proportion. And then you also want to put in 2% of salt. 2% of that weight should also be salt.
Okay.
Add salt into it. And this guy recommends the onion salt.
Sure. Oh.
And then you use like 0.005% percent for the pepper mixture, and then there's some boiled onions. But you take all the meat and you cube it and then cook it and basically boil it for an hour, hour and a half. And then you mix it all together. You grind it all up. Then you grind it all up again. And eventually I think I let mine sit for like 2 days or overnight. And then basically you stuff it all in these sausage casings then, hang it for 3 days in the cooled area, and that's pretty much ready to use. So
that's great.
Wow. I'm going to make that.
It's good.
I absolutely love liver sausage, and I mean, I've been accused of eating weird things before in my life, but I will tell you, I also love when it becomes mainstream in the Midwest. Liver sausage, Braunschweiger, is very commonly eaten, and I think that sounds delicious, and I've been looking for something to do with whitetail livers. Mm-hmm. You know, we've made goose liver pâtés before, and that's delicious too. But wow, that sounds fantastic. I cannot tell you how great it's been having you, Patrick Durkin, on the show. Thank you so much for coming. Check out his stuff on the Fowl Life podcasts as well, Travel Wisconsin editions. Folks, we love having you along. This has been Raised in the Woods.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.